Trenick, it seemed, was a man of few words. He remained silent, twisting his head, constantly searching the night.
We know who you are,
Faro cut in. Carthoron blinked.
Oh? You work for the Interloper.
The Interloper?
Your employer, this Mage of Shadow.
Ah, yes.
He's meddled with the house already. I warn you, we will brook no more interference.
Carthoron was frowning in such confusion he could feel his brows hurting. He cleared his throat.
As you say.
Faro grunted, somehow satisfied. From the mid-distance, a hound's great baying howl broke upon them. Carthoron flinched and spun to scan the obscuring murk and rippling shadows.
Perhaps you'd best come with us, Faro said. You should be safe. Perhaps you can talk some sense into your patron.
Carthoron turned back, his brows now raised very high indeed.
My patron? Talk to him.
Faro and his companion set off once more, and Carthoron followed.
Yes, Faro said, because he is approaching, and we believe that his goal is the house.
House? Carthoron asked himself as he followed along. What in the name of mail are they talking about? He squinted into the murk. And, Urko, don't you get yourself killed, damn you. Nadurian slammed shut the door to Smiley's and leaned against it, panting his relief. Next to the entrance, Grinner relaxed down into his seat, easing his knives back into their leather sheaths. He wiped the cold, clammy fist from his face and let out a long breath, his hand still shaking.
Too long since I've walked an open battlefield of Majory, a damn free-for-all of colliding warrens, realms, and rampaging monsters.
Surly came out from behind the bar.
Well, what's going on?
He motioned for a moment to catch his breath, then said,
It looks like your employer is making a show.
She sent a scowling glance to a darkened window.
All this?
Yes.
She nodded curtly.
All right, let's go.
He gaped at her, let out a near nervous laugh.
You don't quite understand.
She pulled on a jacket. Grinner stood, as did Tokaris and Shrift at their table. Nearer the back, the two local hires, Dujek and Jack, stood up as well. Surly waved them down.
You lot guard the place. Grinner, you're with me.
She motioned Nadurian onward.
Let's go.
He pulled a hand down his face, let out another long breath.
Well, in for a penny, in for a crown.
Crossing a stone bridge over one of the channels of a thin, sluggish river that ran through the city, Sister of Cold Nights was rather surprised to see a great hulking fellow dragging himself up the dressed stonework side of the channel. He was sodden and chuffing and puffing to himself as he climbed.
On such a night as this?
Curious, she went down to see who it was. He was quite astonished when she reached down and pulled him up with one hand. He straightened, wiped at his mud-smeared jerkin and trousers. He was obviously of Napan descent, with a blue tinge to his skin.
Thank you, ma'am. Name's Urko.
Nightchill.
She walked on, and he trailed along with her.
Not a night to be out, she continued. There are things in this storm.
I know.
He raised his wide, knotted hands.
I nearly had one. Another minute and I'd have throttled it, I'm sure. But we fell into the river, and I had to let go.
She eyed him.
Really? You had to?
He grimaced, ran a hand over his crew-cut pate.
Can't swim.
Ah.
She wondered if he was referring to one of the hounds, or some other fiend out of shadow. She knew it was possible to destroy them, if one were potent enough. It was rare these days that anything could impress her, yet this one's feat, if true, was worthy of it. She crossed streets and squares, always directing herself towards the nexus of power manifesting in the town. Eventually she reached it, or as close as she could come in the normal mundane world. She faced a small square, a crossroads, really, graced by a small stone drinking fountain, fed, no doubt, by spring water channeled in from higher on the island. Facing the small square, one block over, as she suspected, squatted the structure the locals called the Dead House. Here also were gathered the night's witnesses. Seeing these people through the murk, Urko at her side grunted his recognition. He bowed his farewell to her and jogged off to join a group of his fellow Nappans, together with a mage she knew to be a compatriot of Agela's. And speaking of the servant of the Weaver and an Eye of the Enchantress, she too stood to one side. She went to join her and nodded a greeting, to which Agela merely scowled.
"What do you want here, Elder?"
"I am merely curious." Agela snorted her skepticism. "And our friend, Obo?" Agela snorted once again.
"Only the submersion of the entire island would bring him out."
While they watched, the churning and spinning tatters of murk and shadow coalesced, rather like a sort of funnel cloud, while two shapes took on solidity and form within. The display of power was of interest to Sister of Cold Nights, as she saw demonstrated a mastery of Minas. But she sensed far more, something she hadn't witnessed in ages. The lineaments of an elder realm thought lost. Ancient Kurald Emolan. This itself was of great note generally as well as to her personally, as it touched directly upon her purposes. Great interest generally, as was affirmed by another figure she'd glimpsed watching from shadow itself, no doubt invisible to all else present. Lean and tall, in weathered time-gnawed armour, his face a dried leather mien of bared yellow teeth. She quickly glanced away. Edgewalker, guardian of shadow. The gyre of raw potency tightened and darkened. Energies crackled and snapped about it. It looked as if it consisted of a great mass of shadows, all flowing into it from every nook and cranny of the city, and perhaps even beyond, mayhap the entire island. Thus it deepened and intensified, until not even her senses could penetrate the dense liquid gloom of dusk at its centre. The concentration of power amassed impressed even her. Then, with a boom as of a release of tension or energies that struck everyone as a physical blow to the chest, the pressure and presence of a gateway passed, and the gusting contrary winds began to ease. The shadows drifted away, revealing two figures in the square who had not been present earlier, the two whom she knew from Heng, the short mage of Minas and the slim knife-fighter with whom she had spoken before. Sister of Cold Nights glanced over to where Edgewalker had been watching, fully expecting to see him gone. But he was not. He remained still, and appeared even more intent as he stared across the square. He even carried his sheathed sword in his bony hands now, as if ready to draw. She followed his gaze, and had to tense. Four creatures of ancient legend were now edging forward into the square, muzzles low, ears down, clearly stalking the two at the centre. The Hounds of Shadow. Everyone gathered about the side streets and alleyways backed away as the creatures slid forward on their forepaws, while the slim one, Dancer, shifted to guard the Major's back, drawing his knives. She applauded such bravery, but it was useless. There was nothing they could do, nor could or would anyone interfere. Those beasts could tear anyone and anything apart, even as Athani had died in their maws. Agela, she noticed, had edged closer to her side. Wisely, she had yet to raise her warren.
"Can you dismiss them?" Agela whispered.
She shook her head. Agela crossed her arms.
"The fools! All that effort just to be torn to bits like all the others before them."
But Sister of Cold Nights glanced aside to where Edgewalker still watched, intent, almost concerned.
"Perhaps not," she answered.
The beasts closed from all sides. The largest was mostly grey, though with a white stomach. Female. Her blue eyes shone like sapphires, and it appeared as if she limped from some battle. Another bore a darker grey pelt. An offspring? and his eyes were mismatched, one being a similar blue, the other a golden yellow. The third's pelt was all a scarred and tangled dirty yellow, its eyes dark, near black, while the last was a black so dark as to appear blue. Its eyes shone a rather alarming blood red. Dancer said something over his shoulder to his companion then, which Sister of Cold Nights made out as, "Now would be a good time." She could not help but smile at this last bit of bravado before the end. At least these two wouldn't shame themselves before being torn in two. And yet, she kept a sidelong eye on Edgewalker. The ancient, some said the creator of shadow itself, watched intently, a hand on his weapon's grip, the other on the sheath, as if ready to draw and stride forward. Strange, that. He'd never interfered before, not once, when so many had fallen attempting to master shadow. A whisper came to her then, a story she'd heard long ago from a fellow Azathani, that Edgewalker had tired of his guardianship and had been searching for a worthy inheritor all this time. She eyed the little mage now, wondering, could it really be? The Dolhon ancient, though not really an ancient, she saw, as her vision could penetrate his glamour, now fiddled with his fingers at his chest. It was as if he were playing a child's game of cat's cradle, but with nothing visible between his fingers save shadows. And to her increasing disbelief, ropes and tangled knots of said shadows now came slithering out of the deeper pools of murk about and lashed themselves tight round the legs of the four beasts. She would have been dismissive of such efforts were they plain Minas workings alone, but these carried the unmistakable essence of Elder Kurald Emolan. Somehow this mage has mastered both, and now had at his command two sources of power to draw upon. Yet even such unprecedented might was not enough. The eldritch beasts fought and yanked despite their countless bonds, still drawing ever closer to the two men. The potency being brought into existence in the square raised a pressure in the air, making it hard to draw breath. The very stones of the street cracked and burst, heaving and grinding. The rising intensity of the unveiling reminded her of exchanges she'd witnessed long ago, when elders fought without any regard for the calamities they unleashed. Even Agela winced, a hand going to her chest as she panted for breath. Across the way, the old maid she'd met on the dock fainted, but was held up by a Napan with him. Still, these ancient monsters could not be brought to the ground. Each struggled onward, wrapped in twisting cords of shadow, snarling and slathering, utterly intent upon tearing these two trespassers to bloody shreds. The little black-skinned mage at the centre of the storm now leaned forward, hands lowering, as if he were pushing something down into the ground before him, straining with redoubled effort. A new, third source of power broke upon everyone like a striking waterfall, and Agela grunted at the shock of it. Sister of Cold Nights, however, recognised the source of this new puissance being drawn by the mage and was outraged. She knew its colourings, its flavour, name it what you will, and she could not believe it. How can he touch this? She knew very well that that particular wound had been sealed away, forbidden, unbroachable. She knew this because it was she and her brothers, Draconis and Karul, who had sealed it away ages ago. All to heal the ancient crimes of the so-called High King. How could this one have possibly penetrated their wardings? Then she understood, and crossed her arms, almost snarling herself. Shadow, of course, broken. It leaks everywhere and into everything. Is this your insight, little man? Then she paused, wondering. Did you see this, Karul? Is this why you sent me this way? Perhaps so. And so she eased her shoulders. It was not for her to interfere. Events must unfold. Only then, Karul had warned, could she reach her goal. The fearsome potency now bearing down upon the four hounds would have crushed buildings. Two collapsed amid their ropes and fetters of knotted shadow. The muzzles of these quickly became lashed in their magical bonds, and they were yanked to their sides where they lay, panting, eyes rolling. As for the largest, the one, mostly grey, with a white stomach, Her eyes seemed to shine like blue stars now, and she stood, quivering in a raging fury, upright, refusing to kneel. The Major's partner, the lean one who moved so gracefully, approached and raised a knife for the kill. Yet at the last moment, the Mage stayed his partner's arm. Instead, he brought his head next to the hound's, despite the snarling lips and gnashing fangs, and appeared to whisper something into the matriarch's ear. Those ears fell then, the muscular shoulders hunching, and the Mage backed away, gesturing. The countless fetters and chains of twisted shadow fell away like smoke, and the hounds rose. The tall matriarch shook herself, chuffing. Then, with window-rattling howls, the four bounded off in all directions, growling and snarling their enraged frustration. Sister of Cold Nights let out her breath, whispering to herself, "Not since December Lacus."
"What was that?"
Agela asked from her side, glaring and wiping blood dripping from her nose.
"Nothing. Interesting times, yes?"
"Who is that little shit?" she growled. "That was far more than Warren magics."
"Yes, it was. The Enchantress is sure to be interested."
"She knows already," Agela answered, daubing at her nose. "Of course. Tariss watching through her eyes."
In the square, the pair now walked to the two guardians at the gate to the deadhouse. The Mage and the short guardian whom she knew as Faro spoke together. She ached to hear their conversation, but thought it unseemly to go running across the square. So she walked, determinedly. Agela accompanied her. By the time they reached the gate, the pair had entered the grounds and were approaching the house. For an instant, a terrifying dread clutched her chest.
Ancients, they are not going to assail the house.
The entire city could be in danger. But no such confrontation arose. To her eyes, the two merely seemed to dissolve into the shadows and disappear as they neared the threshold. Agela clutched at her sleeve.
"What was that? Did they enter? What did you see?"
"I know not." Agela growled wordlessly, yanked her grip free.
"Don't play the enigmatic elder with me. What did you see?"
"What you saw. They disappeared."
She nodded to the guardians, who were standing before the small garden gate, barring their way.
"You allowed them entrance."
Faro nodded, while his fellow held his huge halberd at the ready.
"Indeed. Why?"
Agela snapped.
"They correctly intuited the limits of our purpose."
"Which is?"
To this, Faro said nothing. Not used to such open defiance, Agela actually growled just as the hounds had.
"You are unfamiliar with the house?" Sister of Cold Nights asked her.
"Yes," she grunted, reluctant to admit her lack of knowledge. "The Enchantress warned me to stay away from it."
"Triss would know."
"Wise of her."
She gestured to the guardians.
"These two are charged not with keeping things out of the grounds. They are charged with keeping things in."
Faro inclined his head in agreement.
"And did those two enter the house?"
To this, Faro merely shrugged.
"I care not."
Agela snarled anew, but Sister of Cold Nights bowed her farewell.
"We will learn no more here."
She turned away. The Nappans were retreating, the large one, Urko, carrying their unconscious mage.
"Interesting times," she repeated to Agela, and, inclining her head in farewell, walked off.
She heard Agela's heeled boots cracking against the cobbles as she stormed away in the other direction. Lastly, she scanned the murk for any sign of the one some named the Guardian of Shadow, Edgewalker. But he had departed as well. Tattersail awoke to the splitting agony of a headache such as she'd never before experienced. Blinking, she peered about. She lay in the street, sodden from mist and dew, and no sign of the storm remained. It was just before the dawn. Groaning, she pushed herself upright. Her glance happened to skitter across the gory wreckage of two bodies down the street, each now supporting several seabirds and stray dogs, and, gagging, she staggered off. She touched the back of her head and felt a crust of dried blood there. Gods, she'd hit her head hard. What a headache. How many bricks had fallen on her anyway? She even had dried scabs from a nosebleed. Nursing her head, she carried on through the manor house district and up Rampart Way to the hold. Here, the sleepy pre-dawn guards let her in with a nod. As a mage, she was expected to be coming and going at all hours. She climbed the stairs to the top floor and eased open the bedroom door so as not to wake Mock. She pulled the ruined dress over her head and dropped it to the floor, then soaked a cloth in a basin of water and wiped the dried blood from her face. Mock, hidden beneath the thick blankets, stirred then. She crossed to the large four-poster and drew back the covers. It was not Mock in the bed. It was her maidservant, Viv, and she was wearing only a thin singlet. The girl blinked sleepily, stared, then gaped. Her face went as white as the sheets heaped about her. She threw herself forward to wrap her arms round a stunned tattersail, sobbing.
"Don't blast me into nothingness. He made me do it. Threatened to sell me into slavery to the Dol Hon if I didn't. Please!"
Tattersail pulled at the girl's arm, trying to extricate herself. All she could manage were single, soothing words such as,
"Quiet. Yes. Fine."
The side door to the wash chamber opened, and Mock walked in, fiddling with his untucked shirtings.
"Get a move on," he began.
And then he looked up. His brows rose. Then he suddenly, inexplicably, laughed. He waved to the bed.
"She was scared by the storm, so I let her sleep here. That is all. Nothing more, dearest."
Viv gaped anew, making choking noises. Her face blazed a red to match her hair. Tattersail gestured for her to leave, and after one look up at her mistress, she gathered together a handful of the sheets and scuttled off. Mock went to a sideboard and poured a glass of wine.
"Please, dearest, it looks bad, yes, but what would I want with another, really, when I have you?"
She just shook her head, her aching, pulsing, reverberating head.
"I've been a fool, Mock, but I'm not that much of one."
He leaned back against the table, opened his arms.
"Please, that girl? Ha, a dalliance, nothing more, nothing serious, really."
And he tossed back the wine, but she noticed his hand shaking. She realized with a shock that right now he was very scared of her. She merely shook her head. She simply felt tired, so very tired of it all.
"I'm not going to do anything, Mock. We're just finished."
She went to an armoire, dug around, and found a travelling bag. Into this went shirts and trousers and skirts, and her deck of dragons. While she packed, Mock kept speaking, but she ignored him.
"What do you mean, finished?" he was saying. "You would throw away being a Marquesa for this? Show some judgment, child. Some sense of proportion. Really, I do think it is time that you grew up. We make a great team, shipboard, we really do. But fine, if we don't get along in private, that need not be a problem. We need not share a room. You can have the pick of any you should choose. Benefits of being a Marquesa, yes? Or even a queen."
She was pushing her toiletries into the bag when he made this last comment, and she had to stop herself from raising her warren to show him what she thought of that loathsome idea. When she reached the door, he finally lost his temper.
"Fine," he yelled. "You'll never be anyone. You lack the backbone. Go back to your farm or your fisher parents or whatever. You'll be a nobody."
She paused at the door, eyed him, standing flushed and dishevelled.
"I'd rather be what you call a nobody
than contaminated by this. Walking away, she heard the glass burst against the door. Later, in town, she knocked on another door, a sturdy one of thick oaken blanks, a garland of rare herbs strung across its front, fragrant and colourful. The door opened, and she stared into the face of her old patron and teacher, Ergela. The woman looked to be sharing the same headache Tattersail still nursed. She appeared pale, her eyes red and sunken, her hair rather frazzled and unkempt. But she opened her arms wide and gave her visitor a warm hug, drawing her within. The shop looked just as it had before, as if no time had passed at all, and Tattersail cleared her throat.
"I've been a..."
Ergela raised a hand for silence.
"No need," she murmured. "Would you like some tea?"
Tattersail felt as if an immense weight had been lifted from her, and she dared an attempt at a smile.
"Thank you. That would be... yes, thank you."
Over tea, Agela's wonderful reviving herbal tea, the older woman eyed her as if attempting to take her measure.
"What did you make of the storm?" she asked,
perhaps trying for neutral conversation. Tattersail laughed weakly.
"I was unconscious almost all night. I fell and hit my head."
"Ah,"
Ergela nodded.
"So what do you plan now? As I said, there are schools in Khan that would take you in an instant. I will write a letter."
Tattersail shook her head.
"No."
Ergela raised a brow.
"Really? No?"
"No. I was wondering about those old-style mage academies in Tali. Are any of those still taking students?"
Ergela sat back. She raised her gaze to the ceiling, which was cluttered with sheaves of hanging, drying herbs and clusters of leaves and bundled desiccated flowers.
"Old imperial-style battle magics? Really? Obsolete, I should think."
But Tattersail was nodding.
"That's the training I want."
Her slim, bird-like mentor studied her tea.
"It just so happens that two such academies still exist. They are small, however, without prestige among the courts."
"I don't care about that. I want that training."
Ergela finished the tea.
"Well, if that is what you want, I will write you a letter of introduction, of course. You can take the first ship out to the mainland."
Tattersail fought to suppress a blush of shame.
"After the things I said to this woman."
She felt her eyes becoming hot and tearing up. Nothing had worked out as she wished. Everything was so ruined. Ergela watched her silently for a time, then said gently,
"Sometimes it is okay just to cry."
Chapter 16. Lee waited out the storm in the sprawling combination tavern and gambling room, ground main floor, of the Golden Gerfalcon. Her table was towards the rear, where she sat, leaning her chair back against the wall. With her sat a lieutenant and some guards, a paltry few, now that business had fallen off so dramatically. In fact, all she could be said to control was Geffen's old place, plus a few warehouses down at the waterfront. Support just kept dribbling away as talk spread of the deadly knifer heading the opposition. She was frankly thinking of getting out of the business altogether, trying another line of work. It was far into the night when the storm petered out. Some of the sailors and local patrons claimed they heard hounds howling through all the thunder and rattling of windows, and talk naturally turned to the island's legendary shadow moons. Lee just rolled her eyes. Of course, all the damn dogs were out there howling at the banging shutters and claps of thunder. Natural, wasn't it? No need to reach for any supernatural explanation. Stupid island hicks. Gusps sounded then from the front, and several of the late-night crowd jumped to their feet. Lee motioned for one of her boys to take a look, but even as the guard rose to his feet, the source of the commotion appeared, pushing his way across the room to them.
It was their friend, Cowl, and he looked in a bad way. The gasps were for the bright blood that smeared the man's shirt front, hands, and face. He pulled a chair to Lee's table and sat, daubing at his bloody nose. Her remaining lieutenant, a young gal named Ivala, whose ruthlessness impressed even Lee, shot her a look that said,
"Now's our chance to rid ourselves of this asshole."
Lee gave a slight negative shake of her head.
"Get me a hood damned rag, would you?"
Cowl croaked, his voice hoarse. None of Lee's three guards, nor Ivala, nor Lee, moved to get up. The assassin cocked a brow to Lee, who sighed and motioned to one of the staff. She called over,
"Bring a wet rag,"
and the serving girl ran for the kitchens.
"What happened to you?" she asked. "Get mugged?"
The young fellow, actually probably only slightly younger than she, shot her a warning glare, then glanced significantly to her guards. Lee rolled her eyes again, but waved them away.
"Get some sleep, everyone," she told them.
They all got up to go, leaving the two of them alone. The servitor came back with a wet cloth that Cal used to clean his face and hands. Lee watched, her hands tucked up under her armpits, leaning back in her chair. It occurred to her that the man's nosebleed, or whatever it was, appeared far worse because of his near sickly paleness.
"Notice anything strange about the storm?" he finally asked, the cloth now pressed to his nose.
She shook her head.
"No."
He snorted, then winced, cursing, and pressed harder on his face.
"Why?" "Our friends are back."
Lee poured herself a fresh glass of red wine.
"Really? You mean the two you've been waiting for?" "Yeah, them. Turns out that Dol Hon mage is the real thing. He's damn strong."
Cal took the glass just as Lee finished filling it and drank.
"Hey, that was mine."
Cal tossed the rest back. Lee gestured impatiently for a servitor.
"So? Looks like it's knife to knife for us. Him and me. Which is fine. I prefer it that way. No confusion as to the results, if you know what I mean."
Lee took a fresh glass from the servitor and poured again.
"Whatever."
She eyed the fellow and hoped her disapproval was clear.
"Listen. Them and me, we got an understanding. You go after that dancer fellow and they'll think I'm behind it. I don't want that kind of trouble."
The damned assassin laughed again, wincing once more and holding his head. Once he'd regained his composure, he waved her off as if dismissing her.
"The only reason you're still here is you're too small to bother with. But,"
and he raised a hand as if to forestall any umbrage from her,
"I take your point. I'll make it clear that it's personal and professional, just between him and me."
Lee was skeptical, but let it lie.
"Fine."
He stood, pushing back his chair.
"Thanks for the drink."
She raised her glass to him.
"Here's hoping you die, asshole."
After helping Urko carry Nadurian to a room, Carthoron went to the bar and pulled a tankard of weak beer, then slumped into a chair. The rest of the crew did likewise. It was quiet now, the only noise being Urko talking at a table with all those who hadn't been outside, explaining as best he could what they'd seen.
"So, they're back?" Takaris asked.
"Don't know," Carthoron answered. He glanced to Surly at the bar. "They disappeared again."
She stood, leaning against the counter, arms crossed, glaring at the air ahead of her.
"So," he prompted, "what do we do?"
"Carry on with the repairs," she said.
"Are we gonna go?"
Urko asked.
"He won't want us taking his ship."
Surly cast him her searing glare.
"It's our ship."
Urko shrugged.
"Yeah, but we promised to work for him."
Surly's lips turned down even further.
"We'll work for him from far away. Anyway, he's gone again, isn't he?
disappeared. Maybe gone forever. We just have to assume. Grinner came thumping down the stairs.
How is he? Carthoron asked.
He nodded his assurances to everyone.
He'll live. Just some kind of shock. Our patron's majory doesn't agree with him, apparently.
He turned to Surly.
May I?
She gestured him off.
Of course. Go ahead.
He hurried out the door.
Of course, Carthoron thought.
He's worried about Hall. Shrift rose and went to the door as well.
I'll take watch,
she said, and stepped out. Crust, Surly said from the bar.
Yes?
She was still staring off ahead of her.
You have another moon.
Carthoron nodded.
Damn straight, after that display. Best to be careful.
He shook his head. Who would have thought the little runt had that in him? Taming the hounds of shadow. He drank and shook his head again.
By all the ancient powers above and below, who would have thought?
How long this time, I wonder, hey? He murmured aloud.
Surly just stared ahead, thinking furiously, perhaps, about what this latest revelation meant for her long-term plans.
Don't know, Urko answered. The locals say no one and nothing ever comes out of that place.
Carthoron emptied his earthenware mug and sighed.
Well, they had plenty of work to do, regardless.
Dancer found himself in darkness. Not the dark as of a moonless night, but a complete and utter black, as if he swam, lost within a sea of elemental night.
Where are we?
He asked of the blackness.
I'm not sure,
Kelimved answered, sounding reassuringly close, but also completely spent and wrung out.
Understandably so. Can't you see?
He asked.
No, too dark.
Well, make some light. Do your hocus-pocus majory.
Can't. There are no shadows here.
You can't make us a plain light. Dancer felt almost betrayed.
What kind of mage are you?
Not that kind.
Ah.
Above, a door had opened, casting weak, watery light, as of a sickle moon, down a set of stone steps. The feeble light was occluded, however, by the lumbering, gigantic shape of an armoured colossus who came thumping down the steps. Dancer drew his heavy parrying gauche once more, thinking,
"This is just not my night." "We are within," Kelenved called out. "Why dispute this now?"
The giant did not answer from within its obscuring full helm. It drew a blade fully as large as a two-handed sword and held it in one gauntleted hand. It swung ponderously. Dancer and Kelenved evaded the blow. The blade rang on the stone-flagged floor.
"Do something,"
Dancer hissed to his partner. Kelenved held up his open hands.
"I have nothing left."
Snarling his frustration, Dancer threw himself at the colossus, striking low, but his blade rebounded from the giant's mailed leggings. He evaded another sluggish blow and called,
"This is not my strong suit." "I have a plan,"
Kelenved answered, throwing a finger in the air. Dodging a straight up-and-down cut, the clashing iron raising sparks from the stones, Kelenved ran for the stairs. Dancer watched him go, almost with disbelief.
"That's your plan! Run away!"
Topping the steps, Kelenved called down,
"A time-honored tradition!"
Dancer easily evaded the ponderous guardian to follow his partner up the stairs. He found an empty hallway. From below came the heavy thumping of the giant pursuing. A panicked yell from Kelenved brought Dancer running up the hall to a small parlor, or salon, where flames crackled in a fireplace. Dim, dirty windows hinted at early morning outside. Kelenved writhed on the floor, fighting something small and furry that was wrapped around his head, yanking at his hair. Dancer let his arms fall.
"It's that Nacht thing, your pet!"
Kelenved stopped wriggling.
He struggled to his feet, dragged the thing round to study it.
Demon! Bad demon!
The thing let out an enormous belch, and Kellenved flinched. Dancer looked to the thick, soot-blackened log rafters above.
Change its damned name, would you?
A crashing footfall announced the entry of the giant, blade readied. Kellenved froze, gaping up at it, as did the Nacht in his hands, its arms wrapped round his neck. It seemed to Dancer that both wore the exact same expression of stunned consternation. The armored colossus lowered its blade, its shoulders falling, as if in disappointment. Then it turned and trudged away down the hall. Carefully extricating himself from the creature, losing little pawfuls of hair, Kellenved set the beast down on a nearby table. He brushed his hands together.
There. Now that that's settled...
Dancer threw out his arms.
What? What's settled?
The little mage just shrugged.
I have no idea.
He peered about the room.
Now, let's have a look round.
We are in this house thing, then? Kellenved nodded absently.
I thought it was supposed to be hard to enter. Oh, it is, I assure you.
But we got in without much trouble. Kellenved made a tisking noise.
Really? Not much trouble? I'll have you know the route I brought us on couldn't be duplicated by anyone alive. We sneaked in, my friend. If you try to force your way in, then yes, it is frankly impossible. But if you come sliding up through darkness and shadow, shift through a number of warrens and realms, edging up closer and closer each time, pretending to be part of the darkness, sorting and searching until finally the planes overlap, so to speak.
Dancer eyed him sidelong. If you say so. The mage fiddled with his newly reappeared walking stick, peering about, not meeting Dancer's steady gaze.
Or it just let us in. That would rather take away from the magnificence of my achievement, don't you think?
Dancer crossed his arms.
What did you say to that hound, anyway?
Kellenved sent him a look, one brow raised.
What? I merely told her that if they cast their lots in with me, they would see a great deal of action.
He waved Dancer onward.
You see, it struck me that they must be truly bored sniffing among the sands and ruins and ghosts. With me, they're sure to get out much more.
Dancer let out a long breath, ruefully shaking his head.
In other words, you cut a deal.
The little major's face twisted up, pained.
Really, Dancer, words do mean something, you know. You should take more care in your, casting.
But Dancer would not stop shaking his head.
No, I'm spot on, don't you see it? We're the hounds in this scenario. The house cut us a deal.
Kellenved had his arms out as if bewildered.
I assure you, I have no idea what you are talking about. It was only through my pure genius and profound insight into the mysteries of Warren manipulation that I was able to penetrate the hidden interstices, aporia, and lacunae of this structure's thaumaturgical defences.
Dancer waved him silent and headed up the hall.
Save it for the histories.
Falling into step with him, Kellenved raised a finger into the air.
Histories! Now there's an idea!
4 days after the Night of the Shadow Storm, as everyone was calling it, Tokaris waved Carthoron to the front door of Smiley's. He gestured outside.
Someone here about hiring on?
Carthoron nodded. He was about to set out for the waterfront anyway. He opened the door to see a tall and lean young Dolhorn lad standing before a small two-wheeled cart, the kind wharf stevedores use to haul awkward loads. It held what looked like a big roll of blankets. The lad bowed from his waist with an odd sort of formality and stiffness.
You work for a mage and his partner?
The one who recently had dealings with the place called the Dead House? Carthoron nodded, rather intrigued.
Yes?
I wish to offer my services, in return for a favour.
Well, they're not here right now.
They have entered that place, as some of the locals say.
Carthoron nodded again. We think so.
The lad gave a curt nod.
Very well. I will wait, but first I have an errand to run. Is there by chance a temple to Hood within this town?
Carthoron rubbed his chin, rather bemused.
Well, there's a quarter where you can find all kinds of altars and such, down the way, but maybe not a temple.
The lad peered down the street.
Very good. My name is Darsem, by the way.
Carthoron Crust. The fellow took up the long handles of the two-wheeled cart and headed on down the street. Carthoron watched him for a moment, rubbing his chin, still bemused. The door opened behind him, and Hall peered out, blinking and wincing in the morning light. She still hadn't fully recovered from whatever trauma had been inflicted on her that night.
"Who was that?"
she asked, a strange sort of urgency in her tone.
"Don't know. Some Dolhon named Darsem who wants to talk to Kellenved."
She stared after him, then turned back to the common room, calling,
"Grinner, follow that Dolhon with the cart."
Grinner rose from his table and ducked out past them.
"Right."
Carthoron nodded his farewell to Hall and ambled off for another day's work, refitting the Twisted. That night, when Carthoron returned to Smiley's, he was rather surprised to find the Dolhon fellow sitting at a table in the corner of the common room. He crossed over to where Shrift, Grinner, and Nadurian held a table on the opposite side of the room. The rest of the place was empty but for three regulars, drunken sailors all. He sat down and nodded over to their visitor. He asked, low, "So, what's the story on this guy?" Grinner just shrugged.
"He pulls his cart over the altar quarters, talks to some people, then drags it to an old place built of field stones on the edge of town. There, some old guy comes out and actually bows to our boy here. He puts his bundle inside, leaves his cart there, and comes back here. Been here all day."
Carthoron grunted, losing interest.
"How are the repairs coming?"
Shrift asked.
"Faster, if you'd help out."
The swordswoman shivered her revulsion.
"I ain't going near that thing."
"You'll have to, eventually."
She looked away.
"I know, I know."
"So, what now?" Grinner asked, sending a meaningful glance to their guest. Carthoron decided he had to eat, even if his brother was cooking. He stood, saying,
"Nothing, just keep working,"
and headed for the kitchen. After searching the house, which proved remarkably pedestrian in its empty, dust-filled chambers and closets, Kellenved headed for the front door. Here, the giant set of oddly designed armor of interlocking iron plates, complete with full helm, stood in an alcove, rather like a museum display. Kellenved regarded the thing for some time, peering up, while Dancer waited, impatient. The mage reached out with his walking stick and tapped the battered chest plate. It did not ring hollow, rather it thumped densely. The giant's helm grated as it lowered its head to peer at him. Kellenved hurriedly yanked away the walking stick.
"Your pardon."
He wriggled his fingers towards the front door.
"I was just wondering, if we leave, if we can leave, will we be able to return?"
The helm rose as the giant seemed to dismiss them. Dancer and Kellenved exchanged glances, and the mage shrugged.
"Well, only one way to find out, yes?"
Dancer raised a hand.
"Wait. Are you saying you brought us in here fully aware of the possibility that we may never, ever leave again? Prisoners for the rest of our lives?"
Kellenved backed away towards the door. He fluttered his hands.
"Now, let's not get ahead of ourselves."
"Unbelievable."
Dancer reached to catch the fellow by his wide collar, but at that moment Kellenved lifted the latch behind him, pushed open the door, and tumbled out onto the broad slate landing. Dancer strode forward, meaning to throttle him where he lay.
One step took him across the threshold, and the door slammed shut behind his back, battering him onto his stomach. He scrambled quickly to his feet and stood over Kellenved, furious.
"You could have told me!"
The mage was peering up the walkway. He pointed.
"Not in front of their neighbors."
Dancer looked up, blinking at the bright daylight. A few kids on the street stood frozen, gaping at them, as did pedestrians in the small crossroads further away. He pulled Kellenved to his feet.
"You're lucky."
The mage straightened his worn and tattered shirt, vest, and jacket.
"There. You see? No problem at all."
And he started up the walkway, swinging his stick and humming to himself. Dancer could only shake his head.
"Unbelievable. Completely unbelievable."
When they entered Smiley's, everyone jumped. The Nappens, plus others who must be local hires, even exchanged nervous glances. Dancer peered round, a touch perplexed.
"What is it?"
Grinner, clearing his throat, was the first to sit down again.
"Nothing," he said.
But he kept eyeing them sidelong. An old veteran with him, possibly Italian by his greying straight black hair, approached and bowed to Kellenved.
"Magister, I am Nadurian. I've enlisted with your representative, Surly."
Kellenved fluttered his fingers in response.
"Very good. We need more talents, especially ex-Legion."
The fellow looked a touch startled, but bowed again, returning to his table. Surly emerged from the kitchen. She stood regarding them for some time with her arms crossed, as if to say, "Well, well, look who's come dragging themselves back." She approached, her lips twisted in disapproval, and Dancer almost felt contrite, as if he'd been out on a bender. She looked them up and down, said,
"Some show 12 days ago."
Dancer's brows rose.
12 days? Ye gods, much longer than I thought.
"Thank you,"
Kellenved said smugly, and Dancer wanted to hit him. The mage started for the stairs, walking stick tapping the stone floor.
"I'll be in my office if you wish to talk."
Dancer watched him go. "Hiding in your office, you mean?" He faced Surly, but frowned then, and glanced to a figure sitting far to the back. Having his attention, the figure stood, and Dancer could not believe whom he was seeing. The man approached, and Dancer looked him up and down.
"What in the name of all the gods are you doing here?"
It was their righteous friend from Li Heng, Da Sem, and he glanced to the stairs.
"I have business to discuss with your partner."
"With us, you mean?"
The man took a steadying breath, and seeing that gesture, Dancer understood just how extraordinarily important the business was to him.
"With the two of you, then, in private."
Dancer nodded.
"Very well."
He gestured Da Sem to the stairs.
"Let's talk."
He nodded to Surly.
"Later."
But as she watched them go, she was scowling her dissatisfaction even more. When they entered the office, Kellenved was standing at the window, rocking back and forth on his heels. He turned when Dancer shut the door and nodded to Da Sem.
"What brings you to Marla's Island? Changed your mind?"
"In a way," the man answered stiffly. "A service for a service."
"This being?"
The fellow was very uncomfortable, obviously not used to explaining himself. He cleared his throat and said,
"I have something I wish to place in the dead house."
"It's not some kind of damn storage closet,"
Dancer snorted, going to a small table to pour himself a glass of wine. Kellenved was slowly shaking his head in thought.
"Well, it sort of is, actually. And in return?"
"In return, I shall serve you."
Dancer spluttered on his drink. He eyed the swordsman, wiping his shirt front.
"You serve us?"
Darsem's eyes narrowed, as if he'd detected some sort of insult.
"My word is good."
Kellenved raised his hands placatingly.
"Please, do not misunderstand.
We do not doubt your word. It is just that our goals may not be aligned.
I care nothing for your goals. I will serve you.
Dancer eyed Kellenved, raising a brow. The mage tapped his walking stick to the floorboards, rocked back and forth again.
Well, this is all very hypothetical anyway. We may not even be able to re-enter the house.
Darsem took hold of the door latch.
Then let us see.
Kellenved and Dancer exchanged glances once more, and Dancer shrugged. The mage pointed his stick to the door.
Very well.
Darsem led them to the edge of town. Here, at an old dwelling constructed of flat fieldstones, he brought out a bundle and laid it in a cart. A bearded old man in rags lived in the shack and kept bowing to Darsem the entire time. When they left, Darsem, pulling the cart, Dancer couldn't help glancing back. The oldster was on his knees in the dirt, hands raised in prayer.
An adherent of Hood, Darsem explained.
Kellenved led the way to the house. Dancer brought up the rear behind the cart. His neck kept itching, as it did when he was under observation, and he turned his head to see a slim young lad in dark clothes following them at a distance. He frowned, but continued on, glancing back every so often to keep track of the young fellow. He didn't like the smug smile on his face, as if he were privy to some amusing secret known only to him. At the house, Darsem gently picked up the fat roll of blankets and carried it in both arms. Kellenved opened the little iron gate. They walked up the stone path, Dancer in the rear. When Kellenved paused on the broad landing before the door, Dancer looked back and saw the pale lad at the fieldstone wall. The smile was gone. He appeared rather sour now. As Kellenved hesitated, Darsem reached in past him and took the latch. To Dancer's great surprise, it lifted, and the swordsman pushed open the door. Kellenved entered, while Dancer came in last. As he closed the door behind him, he glimpsed the pale lad's scowl. Darsem gently laid the roll down in a side room just off the entrance hall. Dancer and Kellenved watched, curious. He drew back folds of the rolled blankets to reveal the head and face of a young Dalhorn girl, her eyes closed, her hair a sweaty mess, to all appearances asleep.
"What's this?" Dancer asked.
Darsem did not look up from the girl.
"Someone I swore I would protect."
"She will be safe here," said Kellenved,
and Dancer was quite surprised by how serious the mage sounded. With the back of his hand, Darsem eased the girl's sweaty hair from her face, nodding.
"So I was assured."
Dancer was going to ask who in the abyss had assured him of that, when the mage brushed his hands together, announcing,
"Good. So, we have an accord."
Kneeling next to the girl, the swordsman bowed his head.
"We have an accord."
"Excellent. You will accompany us, then. We have an errand of a sort to run."
Dancer eyed his partner in open suspicion.
"What's this?"
Kellenved was grinning.
"You'll see."
Shadows now came swirling up about them, and Dancer raised a warning finger.
"I told you! No sudden damn—"
The three disappeared, leaving dust motes and a few dried leaves and needles to swirl about the sleeping girl. After a time, heavy footsteps sounded, and the armored colossus appeared in the arched entryway. The helmed head lowered as it regarded this strange new visitor.
The first thing Teshren became aware of were his hands and feet. They prickled abominably. Next, his arms and legs registered their agonizing reawakening, and he groaned, or thought he did. His chest suddenly flinched and his back arched. The pain was transporting. Every nerve in his body was aflame. Now he was certain that he screamed until his throat was raw. Then he slept the sleep of tortured exhaustion. Noise awoke him next, a heavy dragging and brushing, as of something very large moving over stone and dirt.
Whispering reached his ears, and he strained anew, listening.
"He's awake,"
a male voice said from the dark.
"Yes, yes,"
a female voice answered, impatient and dismissive. He decided to ask them what was happening. He drew a breath and exhaled, moving his tongue and trying to speak. All he heard was a dry rasping and animal-like growling.
"He's dying," said the male voice. "Isn't that him dying?"
"No, it's not," answered the female voice. "Water," she commanded. "Water for our guest."
A short time later, water suddenly poured over his face from the total darkness, and he gasped, spluttering, trying to swallow without drowning.
"Enough water,"
the female voice commanded once more.
"I apologize," she said. "We get so few visitors down here."
"Where?"
he managed, croaking.
"Where am I?" "Far below your island, little man. Very far indeed." Who are you?"
"What?"
the man answered, incredulous and angered.
"Who among all the ancients do you think?" "Now, now," the woman said. "He is disoriented after his ordeal. Light, I think. Let light be our answer."
Multiple hands clapped brusquely. While Tai Shren watched, straining his eyes in the absolute black, tiny pinpoints of a greenish-bluish light blossomed to a glow. Here and there, all about, they multiplied by the thousands and thousands, until he made out an immense cavern, vaulted far above, and boasting many tunnel entrances, and, facing him, two giant snake-like entities, each emerging from a different tunnel, titanic, each as large in scale as the tower of a fortress to him. One bore the upper portions and features of a human male, the other a female. And Tai Shren, the skeptic and doubting scholar, forced his agonized and punished limbs to move, and he rose to his knees, bowing before the pair, murmuring in awed reverence,
"Derek." "Well, I should think so," huffed the male portion.
"Thank you,"
said the female, and she clasped her tiny hands together.
"Now, our time is short. We spare you, Tai Shren, as your sentence was unjust. We are not without mercy, as you see."
He bowed again, touching his head to the floor before him, and discovering it to be a sea of writhing beetles, roaches, centipedes, and silverfish. He attempted to disguise his shudder of revulsion.
"We shall send you back to the temple," said the male.
"Yes," nodded the female, "and we ask that you carry a message, a warning."
Her voice hardened as she continued.
"Elements within the priesthood are advocating new directions for the cult, and we are not pleased. Is that clear?"
Tai Shren bowed once more.
"Quite. I am honored by your trust and..."
"Yes, yes,"
the male cut in. Aside to the female, he murmured,
"He cannot remain much longer."
She nodded.
"Indeed. Tai Shren, the chemicals injected into your system are abating, and you must go. Frankly, the atmosphere here within this cavern is poisonous to you, and so we shall dismiss you. Farewell, and good luck."
He struggled to his feet, his head bowed.
"My thanks, great one."
Even as he spoke, a strong ammonia stink assaulted him as he inhaled, making him cough. This air, he realized, was that of underground caves, where those who wandered within soon expired for lack of breathable gases. Male and female entities waved their dismissal, and his vision dimmed. As they disappeared, it occurred to him that the female's lower quarters curved to the left as they disappeared into a tunnel, while the male's curved to the right. The two, it seemed, might be the opposite ends of the same entity. A great dislocation assaulted him as he moved through a realm he did not recognize, which he realized must be that of Elder, and unavailable to him. The vastness and depth of puissance he glimpsed in passing was beyond his imaginings. Then,
It disappeared in a sudden, disrupting shear. The cavern lay dark and empty, but for the uncounted millions of squirming insects.
"There is a strength in him," said the male voice into the darkness.
"There will have to be," answered the female. "Carul seems to think he may be the one." "Yet another candidate," murmured the female sadly. "Someone will have to succeed."
"Perhaps," allowed the female. "Perhaps not. Change comes to us all."
"I will not just step aside," affirmed the male.
"No," agreed the female, her voice hardening. "Neither will I."
On his knees, hands pressed to his thighs, Taishren raised his head to find himself in familiar surroundings. It was a private audience chamber off the side of the cult's main temple. Shelves of scrolls lined the wall, while the top of a central table was hidden beneath numerous open manuscripts of ongoing research projects. He crossed to the door and listened. The massed whispering and brushing of robes betrayed a service in progress. Direct's timing could not have been better. Of course. He took hold of the latch, then paused for a time, readying himself. He was terrified, he discovered. His hands shook, his stomach clenched and rebelled. Why so much more nervous now? And he knew, of course. Now was about so much more than merely him. He yanked open the door and entered the temple. It was crowded with the faithful, all in ranks before the raised altar at the front, where the cult elders led the service. Tallow stood in the central place, the demi-drex. He was in mid-sentence, exhorting the faithful. Taishren calmly strode towards the altar, passing through line after line of the massed acolytes and full priests. At first, a silence grew behind him as he passed. Then it filled with gasps and awed whisperings. The hissed discordance grew in volume and reached the front ranks. Tallow faltered, losing his tempo.
"And so, my children," he was saying, "we must return to the proper path, for we have lost our way."
He paused, eyed the rear of the hall, frowning.
"We must..."
His gaze found the vector of the growing disturbance, and his eyes widened in shock. Beside him, Saline lurched to her feet, glaring. Tallow pointed, bellowing.
"What imposter's game is this? Who are you?"
"I am Taishren," he answered, and was proud of the steadiness of his voice. Tallow was shaking his head.
"No, that's impossible."
Beside him, Saline turned sickly pale, almost staggering.
"Not impossible. I've been sent to carry a message for the..."
"Seize him!" Tallow roared. "He has evaded Derek's justice. He is a blasphemer. He has spurned Derek."
"No!"
a new high voice shrieked, a young woman's. A slim figure fought its way forward to the altar, approached Tallow. Now Taishren felt his legs weaken and his resolve faltering as he recognized a disheveled Scylla.
"He is innocent,"
she clasped Tallow's sleeve.
"You promised me he would live, and now look, look!"
And she laughed wildly. He pushed her from him.
"You are ill, sister. Someone restrain this poor child."
He turned from her. Yet even as he did so, her face grew savage and she leapt forward, swinging an arm. Something glinted in her hand, striking Tallow in the back, and he bellowed, staggering. A burst of power from him tossed her backwards into the stone wall behind the altar, where her head hit with a meaty crack. She slumped to the floor, motionless. Tallow swung back to the hall, a hand over one shoulder, pressed to his back.
"He has sent his assassin upon me! I see it now. He would suborn the cult to his own ends. Slay him!"
Those nearest Taishren now closed on him, grasping his dirty robes. Almost as an afterthought, he raised his warren and flicked them away, for his gaze was fixed upon the motionless shape of Scylla where she lay.
"You promised."
So, she said those things to try to save his life.
a bargain offered by him. And now she was dead, slain by him.
His gaze shifted to the man himself as he straightened, rolling his meaty shoulders as if throwing off whatever damage the wound might have inflicted. Taishren saw in his churning warren aura that strange taint or coloration, now even more potent than before. And now he recognized it, the stain of chaos. He raised an arm, pointing.
"Who do you serve?"
The invigilator smiled. Then he swept his arms forward, motioning all the cult's highest-ranked priests and priestesses into action.
"Destroy the apostate!"
The entire body of Kartul's High Temple of Derek hurled themselves upon Taishren. He threw up his protective barriers and was bludgeoned and buffeted within. He could not bring himself to strike back, and so he shifted into the Warren of Thyre and fled. And the army of Derek mage priests, those who could, followed. Chapter 17. The coast looked wild and uninhabited to Lars, yet Kalor remained locked within his cabin, so he and the other seven survivors of the great ocean crossing waited at anchor while white tendrils of noxious smoke came leaking round the door and through gaps in the planking of their master's cabin walls. Finally, towards noon, the door opened, disgorging a massive cloud of evil-smelling smoke that quickly wafted away. Kalor strode out, accoutred as usual in his full-length coat of mail, his weapon at his side. He carried a burning smudge pot that he waved in front of him as he walked to the side. Lars, weak and faint with starvation, limped to him. Taking a deep breath, he dared,
"My lord, shall we disembark?"
Kalor ignored him. He studied the shore as if as hungry as Lars. He waved more of the dense smoke across his face and murmured bizarrely,
"Try to smell me now, bitch."
The smoke lashed then, fuming as if caught in a fierce wind, though no such gusting brushed Lars or the gentle waves about them. Kalor raised a hand for silence and studied the smoke intently. After a time, he nodded as if at some conclusion, then covered the pot with its lid.
"We wait," he announced,
not even turning to face Lars.
"Something strange is coming."
Lars eyed the quiet coast, uninhabited but for a few modest fishers' huts. What could possibly be coming that this fiend would be wary of? Whatever it might be, Lars decided that he certainly wanted nothing to do with it. Still, land, animals, larders. But perhaps there is food, he whined before realizing it, and he flinched, covering his head, ready for a kick or a blow. Their tormentor turned to him, scowling his profound disgust.
There are fish, aren't there?
Lars glanced at the listless, huddled crew.
Fish, of course.
But,
he ventured, bowing,
what can we use as bait?
Kalor had started back to his cabin, but he paused, glancing at Lars. His deeply lined mouth drew up in an evil, one-sided smile.
Those rotting bodies you have hidden below, I should think.
And he slammed the door shut. Lars started guiltily. He eyed the ragged sailors, who stared back, blinking, almost uncomprehending. He pointed angrily.
You've been nibbling too. I know it. Now get some lines over the side.
The sailors shuffled to obey. Darsem sat before a modest fire next to a small series of half-buried walls and toppled stone arches. It was not night, as he would understand it, though the mage Kellenverd had called it that. It was more like an overcast dusk, the sky a dark iron, the shadows thick and heavy. Sighing his impatience, he made a show of warming his hands. In his opinion, this was a stupid errand. They should be on the island. It was clear to him that the power base these two counted on was not secure.
Enemies remained within striking distance and ought to be eliminated. Greater consolidation was necessary, yet here they were, wasting precious time. A dark shape came looming out of the dusky sky. Its ragged, membranous wings flapped loudly as it descended to alight on an arch of ancient stones across the fire from him, and he sat back, studying the strange cross between a pelican and a bat. At last, he thought. The creature paced atop the stone ledge.
A fire? It cawed harshly. You sit here, plain as day, and light a fire? Don't you know where you are?
Darsem opened his mouth to answer, but the beast cut in.
Never mind. Who are you? What are you doing here? What do you want?
He thought through the answers the mage had schooled him in and responded casually, I just thought I'd take a stroll. The beast pressed the tiny hands on its wings to its head.
A stroll? Ancient ones, what have we come to?
It swept a wing to encompass the desolate surroundings.
What does this look like? A garden pastoral? Have you no respect?
It seems quiet enough, Darsem answered. The thing cackled a cawed laugh. It shifted its tiny black pebble eyes left and right.
You'll see, soon enough.
It pressed a tiny hand to one earhole, head cocked.
Any time now.
Darsem peered round as well, as if curious.
Yep, any moment.
The creature dropped its little hand.
They should be here by now.
What should? Darsem asked.
Shut up, fool!
Darsem sat back, sighing. Please, he called loudly. The thing frowned its confusion at him.
What's that? Please? Why?
It hopped then, startled, peering round at the ruins.
Who's there? Bah!
It leapt into the sky, but shadows came lashing about it like knotted ropes, and it fell tumbling to the sands. Dancer came charging out from among the fallen stones to stand over it. Kellenved strolled along behind.
You!
The creature gaped, astonished.
How did you?
Kellenved shrugged modestly, waved his walking stick. Oh, it was nothing, really. I just...
Enough, Dancer cut in. To the beast. Who do you work for?
Go to the abyss!
Kellenved planted his stick into the sands and sighed his disappointment.
You really should cooperate.
I will tell you nothing. Nothing!
It struggled to raise one little hand, thumb and finger pinched together.
See this? You are this. Tiny. A flea. Nothing. Shadow will swallow you.
We shall see.
He nodded to Darsem and Dancer, and the two grasped the thing's feet and dragged it off.
What are you doing?
It demanded.
What's going on?
Dancer directed Darsem to a dark hole exposed among flagstones in the middle of the ruined building. They held the bat-like creature at the hole's lip. Coming along behind, Kellenved offered,
One last chance. Who is in charge here?
Kiss my furry...
Darsem and Dancer let it fall. They heard it thump to the floor far below.
What's this?
It squawked.
Bodies? There are bodies down here.
Kellenved nodded to the stone that had covered the hole, and Darsem began edging it towards the space.
Do you wish to talk now? He called.
Only if you join me.
Well, you have a think about it, Kellenved suggested. We'll talk later. In 100 years, he added, mostly to himself, as the stone slotted neatly back into place. Disappointing, he went on. I'd hoped to get something out of that creature.
The island, Darsem reminded him. Their strategic position is weak.
What's that?
The Nappens. Our friend is right, Dancer added. We're supposed to be in charge, remember? Kellenved rolled his eyes. He threw his arms out wide, as if to embrace their surroundings.
But This is all so much more fascinating.
Later, Dancer answered firmly, and Darsem nodded his support. Kellenved let his arms fall. His lips tightened into a disappointed moo, so very put upon.
Oh, very well, if you insist.
It was late afternoon, and Carthron had the last of a pot of rendered glue heating over a fire on the pier next to the Twisted, when Takaris, up aloft among the standing rigging, called to him and pointed out to the bay. He stepped up onto a crate for a good look, and as soon as he saw the vessel swinging in across the mouth of the harbour, he knew with a sort of heavy weight of despair that they'd waited too long. It was Taral's flagship, the Sapphire. Chos, Urko, Hall, and Takaris all gathered round.
"Jammed with marines, no doubt," Urko said with a curse.
"Why just the flagship?"
Takaris wondered.
"They're not here to fight the Marlazans," Hall observed darkly.
Carthoron nodded his agreement.
"Grab your gear and let's go."
He doused the fire, collected his tools, and jogged with the others for Smiley's. Already a launch was being lowered over the Sapphire's side. Carthoron's last glimpse of the harbour waters allowed him to see a white flag flapping above the crowded boat. When word came of a large Napan man o' war blockading the harbour mouth, Lee's brows rose. When further word came that it was no less than King Taral's flagship, Lee decided to amble down to the waterfront to see how poor old Admiral Mok was going to handle this development. The Marlazan captains had the waterfront cordoned off by ranks of armed marines and sailors. A small contingent of Napans, an honour guard of some sort, together with one rather fat official, climbed up from a packed launch and approached along a jetty. Mok was waiting with a handful of his captains. Lee pushed her way closer, thinking,
"This really ought to be good."
"Admiral Koreth," Mok said, bowing. "You are come for another visit."
The Napan admiral returned the bow, if curtly.
"I am come at behest of King Taral."
Mok stroked his moustache, nodding.
"Ah, yes. My brother regent, how fares he?"
Koreth had drawn off leather gloves that he now slapped across one leg, impatient.
"The king is well. He is irked, however, by an oversight of yours. A mistake, no doubt, as I am certain you mean no insult."
Mok peered about, eyeing the massed Marlazan sailors and marines who held the waterfront and were glaring down at the admiral's elite Napan escort.
"Oh, an oversight, you say? And that is..."
"You have allowed wanted Napan criminals to reside on your island."
Mok raised his face to a freshening wind coming in off the bay, nodding to himself.
"Ah, I see the way of your tack now, Admiral," he shrugged. "Marlaz is an open port. Any and all are welcome."
Koreth was tapping his gloves against his thigh.
"I understand your pride in this. Marlaz has traditionally been an open port. That is a shame."
Mok lost his playful smile, eyed the man's small escort significantly.
"Have a care, Admiral."
Koreth raised his open hands.
"Oh, I do not mean for you or me. I meant for our prisoners."
"Prisoners?"
"Yes. Captives from our recent unpleasantness. Some 40 Marlazan crew, men and women."
The Marlazans assembled on the waterfront set to muttering among themselves. Lee had to shake her head in admiration.
"Well played, Koreth."
Mok could also see this news spreading among the crews, so he put on a stern face, shocked.
"And where are these prisoners?"
Koreth gestured lazily to his vessel.
"Why, on board the Sapphire, now."
Mok set his hands on his hips, raising his voice.
"I demand you hand them over immediately."
"In return for the Napan criminals in your midst, aye."
"First, bring them all ashore."
"Half first."
"You fetch these Napans. I'll not lift a hand against any free resident."
Koreth inclined his head, pleased.
As it should be. Done.
Done.
Koreth nodded to one of his escort, who began signalling the sapphire. Mok turned to his captains.
Give the Napan some help in bringing our lads and lasses ashore.
Hess, Guran, and Rhenish set off down the pier, shouting orders. Lee turned away. Everything seemed to be well in hand. Koreth's hands, that is. A straight exchange, and one Mok could not have dared turn down. Could those damned Napans really be out of her way? She paused as she pushed through the crowd, thinking that she should get over there herself with her boys and be ready to move in immediately. A familiar face caught her attention among the press, that scarred old mage who now worked for the Napans. She gave him her best savage smile.
You, my friend, are about to be out of a job.
But the mage wasn't even looking at her. His attention was focused to the northeast, far out to sea. The man's eyes grew huge, and he went scrambling off, shoving men and women out of his way. Lee peered out over the bay, frowning. Some sort of strange disturbance was headed their way. It looked like a waterspout, or one of those twisting, gyring winds that could whip up over the plains. What did they call them? Wind devils? Cyclones? She shaded her gaze now from dust being thrown up by the gathering winds. What was so frightening about a little localized blow like this? And there wasn't even a cloud in the sky. Carthoron came thumping down the stairs of Smiley's, kit bag on his shoulder, sword at his hip. He was rather surprised to find the whole crew gathered in the common room. "We have to go. Now," he said, a touch uncertain. But Urko, leaning against the wall, just pointed to Surly. She had her arms crossed, and Carthoron thought,
"Shit."
"I'm not running," she said. "There's nowhere to run to." Urko nodded his fierce agreement. "We can find a ship on the far side of the island." Chos snorted.
"A ship? Rowboat, you mean?"
"There's bound to be something." Surly shook her head. "No. I'll not be run down like a rabbit. We meet them here." Urko smacked a fist into a palm with a resounding slap.
"About damn time."
Carthoron motioned to the local hires watching the windows. "And the locals?" Surly eyed them as well, then raised her voice to address them. "You're all free to go. I give you leave. This isn't your fight." Their unofficial leaders, the old veteran Dujek and his seeming adjutant, Jack, shared a glance. Then Dujek cleared his throat.
"If it's all right with all of you, we'll stay."
Surly nodded her gratitude.
"You're more than welcome."
Two Marlazan toughs watching the door shouted a warning and yanked it open. In burst Hall and Nadurian.
"I have an errand," the old Talian mage shouted to Surly. Then Hall pushed him back towards the door, and he was off.
Surly raised her hands to Hall.
"It's okay, we know."
Hall shook her head, short of breath.
"No, you most certainly don't."
Once again, Nadurian found Agela out in the street before her shop. The cobbled way ran more or less east-west down to the waterfront, and she was watching the waters of the bay in the darkening dusk. Barely visible far out across the waves rose a strange blur of a disturbance, and it looked to be headed straight for them.
"Impressive, yes?" he said to Agela.
She nodded, her scowling face showing her habitual disapproval, together with a touch of apprehensiveness.
"I've not seen the like in a century, and it is still leagues off."
"Who do you think it could be?"
She shook her head in a negative.
"I do not know, but there are few who are that powerful."
He blinked in the gusting winds, blew on his fists to warm his hands.
"I'm not looking forward to this."
She eyed him, frowned her confusion, then shook her head.
"We are not interfering. It's not our fight."
"But the city..."
She continued shaking her head in a firm negative.
"Even so,
Our duties lie elsewhere. Understood?
But escalation. What of the other? This night chill?
She has already moved out of the way. She's in the south. In fact, and Agela rubbed her arms as if chilled, we should join her. We will be lodestones to what is coming.
He looked away into town.
I have other duties.
You will be a danger to everyone around you, and they will be helpless before this.
He risked another glance towards the disturbance and winced at the yammering, lashing power at its heart. He'd seen such things before.
Abyss. He'd been a participant. A full-on-to-the-death mage duel, Warren sizzling against Warren.
He'd seen such things brush entire battalions aside. For now, whoever it was, they appeared entirely engrossed with one another. He dared not upset that balance. He gave a curt bob of his head.
Very well, though it galls me to retreat like this.
With luck, they will sweep right on across the island. Frankly, to them, it is as if we aren't even here.
Kellenved shifted the three of them from shadow, and Dancer was relieved to find himself back within the house.
No surprises for once. After brushing dust from his shirt and trousers, he led the way to the front door. As usual, the armored giant stood resting in its alcove. Here, Darsem paused, eyeing the empty side room where they had left his friend.
As I said, Kellenved murmured in the silence, the house has moved her somewhere.
But where? The Dolhon swordsman answered, and Dancer could tell he was upset by the way his hands clenched.
Kellenved gave a small shrug.
Perhaps somewhere less busy.
Dancer snorted his agreement.
I'll say. It must seem like a major port now with us coming and going.
He pushed open the door and set out across the yard to the gate. It was evening, the stars emerging overhead. Kellenved followed, and Darsem came along behind. The wind was high. Some sort of blow was closing upon them from the east, which was surprising, as most storms swept in from the south. Strange, given that it was a clear night. Not one cloud in the darkening sky.
Dancer glanced down the way to the waterfront and stopped, surprised. A damned huge man-o'-war lay at anchor, effectively blockading the harbour. And though its sails were down for the blow, they were clearly a very dark blue. He gestured towards the bay.
What's this?
That is a Napan vessel, Darsem answered.
Dancer looked to the sky.
I can see that. I mean, what's going on?
Kellenved threw his arms out, aggrieved.
For the love of Oppon, I leave on a short errand and everything goes to the abyss.
And there's a windstorm blowing in over the island, Dancer added.
Kellenved squinted east into the gathering murk. His shaggy, greying brows rose, and he actually straightened a touch, as if rising up on his toes.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear, what? Dancer asked, knowing that tone. The mage shooed him and Darsem away.
Go and see if our friends need help. I'm going to be busy for a time.
Busy doing what?
The little fellow waved them off.
Go now. Run.
Dancer backed away, unwilling to leave. Darsem was already jogging towards Smiley's. The gyring winds struck them then, sweeping up the shore and over the city. It reminded Dancer of the dust storms that often came howling across the central Seti plains. He raised a hand to shade his eyes against the gusting, stinging grit and dirt. Kellenved now stood at the middle of the street, arms out, as if he were beckoning to the winds. Dancer took a step towards him.
What on earth?
The heavens opened up in a white, blinding blast that threw him backwards into a wall. Dazed, he staggered for the street.
Kellenved!
A smoking hole in the cobbles was all that remained. The stones lay about, some glowing red, hissing and crackling.
All the gods! It couldn't possibly, really be...
Blinking, Dancer forced himself to look away, then ran for Smiley's. He found the place preparing for a siege. Surly's people were out piling carts and barrels across the front of the bar. Within, an argument was raging. Dujek and the youth, Jack, stood in the center of a ring of yelling Nappans. Arms open, as if begging, Jack was insisting, "Please, reconsider!"
"At least listen to him," Dujek put in.
Spotting Dancer, Surly waved her brusque impatience at the two non-Nappans. "Order these two to stand down." Darsem, Dancer noted, stood to one side, listening. "What's the problem?" Dancer asked Dujek. Surly's jaws worked as she swallowed her anger.
"We don't have time to argue," she snarled.
"We're wrong to dig in here," Jack told Dancer. "We have no avenue of retreat."
Dujek nodded his support.
"What would you have us do then?"
Jack pointed outside.
"The bridges are natural choke points in this swamp of a city. The southern channel has only three to speak of. If we barricade those, we can hold them off. If they look like breaking through, we fall back to another bridge, and so on."
Dancer raised a hand to forestall the barrage of objections from the Nappan crew.
"Just how many soldiers are we talking here?"
"We're thinking about 100 elites," said Grinner. "They're forming columns now. We have to act."
100, Darsem said suddenly.
Dancer was quite startled. He'd almost forgotten about the Dolhon.
"More or less," Grinner answered, wondering where this was going.
"Which of the three bridges is the narrowest?" Darsem asked. Jack answered, frowning.
"The one highest inland. Why?"
The swordsman strode for the door.
"Hold the other two bridges and send the Nappans to me. I will meet them there."
He was out the door before Dancer could object. Dujek and Jack stared at one another, quite startled, until Surly threw her arms out, demanding,
"Who in the name of the Abyss is that madman?"
"You wouldn't believe me if I told you," Dancer answered.
Carthoron poked his head in the door, holding it open against a savagely gusting wind.
"Are we staying or going? We have to move, now."
Dancer waved everyone out.
"Take all the carts and cargo and barricade the bridges."
A brilliant flash burst upon them then, momentarily blinding them, and a blast rumbled across the city.
"Lightning strike!"
Takaris said, as the echoes of the eruption died away.
"That was no lightning," Dancer said.
Once most of them were on the way, plus some 30 local hires, Carthoron ducked back within Smiley's and shut the door against the raging winds. All that remained were Grinner, Hall, Shrift, and a very angry Surly.
"Are you going to cooperate, Surly, or am I going to have to guard the door?"
She thrust an arm out, pointing.
"Get going. You're needed. We're too short-handed to hold anyone back."
"Except you," he answered, firm.
"We can't let them see you."
"I can fight,"
she nearly yelled, almost stamping a foot. Carthoron rubbed the stubble of his unshaven chin.
"Let's hope you don't have to," he answered, "because that would mean we're all dead."
Surly straightened as if slapped. She wrapped her arms round herself in a hug and jerked a fierce nod.
"I'm sorry. Go. You're needed."
He answered her nod. "Good luck." To Grinner, he ordered,
"Guard her."
The burly fellow, their best fighter by far, waved him off. He pushed open the door and leaned into the gusting, contrary wind. The streets were completely empty of anyone. The inhabitants of Malaz were more than familiar with stormy nights. Urko and he had each been given charge of one of the lower bridges. What the Dolhon swordsman intended at the third, he had no idea. He only knew that this Dancer character, who was no fool, had confidence in him. And in any case, he had enough to worry about at his own command. Jogging up to the bridge, he saw his troops still piling and lashing crates and cargo to carts that they turned on their sides. Young Jack was there as well as Choss and Dancer, and some 15 local Marlazan hires, ex-raiders, toughs, and street bravos all.
"Just in time," Choss called, pointing past the barricade.
Carthoron nodded to him and climbed up onto a cart,
A column of the Napan elites was on its way up the street. The fierce wind buffeted him then, almost sending him head over heels, and he shielded his eyes, frowning into the winds. It was odd. There were no clouds at all.
"Something strange, Crust," Joss called up. "I seen a robed guy watching us. When I looked back, he was gone."
"I believe it's a mage battle," Dancer put in. "Kellenved's got involved." Carthoron grunted, unimpressed. What entirely engrossed him was the Napan officer leading the approaching column. He started down the opposite side of the barricade.
"Crust!"
Joss bellowed, outraged.
"Keep building!" he shouted back. "I'll buy us some time!"
Jumping down to the worn timbers of the bridge, he walked forward, hands raised.
"Clemence!" he called. "Is that you?"
The female officer raised a hand to call a halt and started forward alone. They met about a quarter of the way up the arch of the bridge. She wore a set of heavy leather armor, scaled in skirting down to her ankles, each scale intaglioed in swirls and edged in bronze. She pushed back her domed helm and unbuttoned its cheek guards, then set her gauntleted fists at her hips.
"Carthoron Crust, it is you! Clemence, good to see you!"
He gestured to her gear.
"Coming up in the world, I see."
She inclined her head.
"Lieutenant, in the Royal Guard."
Carthoron nodded, impressed.
"So, he sent the royals, eh? For his sister? Of course."
He shook his head.
"She's dead. Took her own life."
Clemence waved a hand, dismissive.
"Don't even try. We've had spies on the island for weeks. She's been identified." "Listen, Clemence, why follow that fool? Look at the damage he's done to the fleets. Come over to us. You know Sureth is in the right."
She lifted her shoulders in a shrug.
"Look what damage he's done to the Marlazan fleets. At least he acts. The right is hers."
She lifted a hand to forestall anything more.
"Don't try to involve me in a political argument right now, Crust. What's done is done. Stand aside, or, unfortunately, I'll just have to kill you and feel bad about it afterwards."
"You can try."
She pulled down her helm.
"What? 50 of the Royal Guard against your ragtag pirates? Don't be a fool, Crust."
He was backing away.
"We'll see. Until then."
He saluted and jogged back to the barricade. Climbing down, he noticed that the piled wood of the crates and carts was wet and slick with oil. Joss met him on the other side.
"Is that Clemence?" he asked.
"Yeah."
"Damn, she's good."
"I know."
Joss handed him a spear and he took it, his brows rising.
"Good idea."
"Jax."
Everyone, he saw, was armed with spears and other pole weapons, even Dancer. With luck, they'd be able to hold the Napans off. He nodded to everyone.
"Okay, line up. Double ranks."
He looked at the spear in Dancer's hands.
"You okay with that?"
The assassin was peering off at the sky, as if distracted, but he nodded.
"For now."
"Good." Marching boots shook the timbers of the bridge.
"Because here they come."
Dancer did his best to push aside his worries regarding Kellenved. Had he truly been blown to atoms? Really? Just like that? Could anything regarding him be that plain and simple? But once the fighting started, it was easy to set all that aside and slip into the focus of battle and instantly forget all else. He thrust as quickly as he could through gaps in the barricade, catching thighs, stomachs, and a